America Weekend.
Good evening. Good to have you with us. We're always glad to know that there are some people who want to be instructed.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalegi. My next guest emanated from the loins of a true comic genius. George Carlin was the most thought-provoking monologist the world has ever seen. We thought we had heard everything that George had to say. Turns out we have not. Here to talk about the new George Carlin release, I Kind of Like It When a Lot of People Die, is his daughter, Kelly Carlin. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ed. Nice to be here.
This is quite an honor to have you on. Now, for any fan of your dad, and there are millions of us, this is quite a treat. Tell us the extremely interesting story behind this new album.
Well, when my dad died, I became the keeper of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I found was a box of audio cassettes, like, you know, good old-fashioned audio cassettes.
Sure.
And as we kind of, there was like a lot of them on top that were kind of more recent or whatever. And the thing is, my dad used to have whatever club or wherever he was at tape every single one of his shows because he was always working on new material or working towards a new HBO show. And then, of course, there were really, really special cassettes at the bottom of the box that he, like, kind of had a note on that had, like, old stuff, like stuff from Summerfest and 1972 Carnegie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were going through these things, and they weren't all in one box. Sometimes I would find a couple somewhere else. And so we found two cassettes that were marked MGM Grand, so that he was in Vegas. And one had the date 9/9/01, and the other one had the date 9/10/01. And I knew that year, my dad had been working on an HBO show through the spring and summer of 2001 called I Kind of Like It When a Lot of People Die.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as we all know, 9/11 happened, and my dad realized that, well, A...
Can't use this now.
He wasn't going to be going into New York City to do an HBO show called I Kind of Like It When a Lot of People Die, and that there was a huge chunk at the end of the show. It's about 25, almost 30 minutes long, that he didn't want to use because it was about that stuff. It was
right.
About natural disasters. It was about a ton of people dying. It was about kind of the end of the world and things like that. And then there was another joke of the whole section on farts that had a plane blowing up. So he had to just shelve all of that material. Well, the thing about it, though, is that he was so smart to keep these, and he did keep them on purpose, I know that, that these two tapes had the original show on it, his original vision for that HBO show in 2001, which he ended up calling Complaints and Grievances.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, oh, well, let's listen to these. This will be interesting. Kind of remembering that, oh, yeah, he changed the show or whatever. And my friend and producer, Logan Heftel, who helped us with the album, he listened to the tapes and he came back and he said, you know, I think there's stuff on here that has never been on any other album or special that he, you know, he ended up picking up some of it and reworking it about 3 years later. But there's a great section in there that no one has ever heard any of it. And so we thought, well, this could be an interesting project. And so we got to talking and thinking about it and decided that, yeah, the world needs to hear
sure.
this stuff.
I listened to the preview last night, and it's laugh out loud hysterical. Now, and what jumped out at me, there's also another piece. It's entitled Boston Rant from 1957. Now, this is amazing. It is extremely early in your dad's career. This is back when he was a straight-laced radio DJ, late 50s. You can listen to him as he's working on his tone, working on that personality that he became so known for. And even then, you can hear in a very young voice, you could hear the George Carlin that we would later come to know.
Yeah, we wanted to put that piece in there just for that very reason. We thought that it was an interesting historical piece and that you can hear his personal thoughts on things that he would, in 1957, you could never get away talking about, certainly on a stage, and no one was. I mean, Lenny Bruce, you know, started doing material that was pretty much just almost as edgy, and of course he was getting arrested all the time. And you can hear in it even, you know, Lenny was one of my dad's heroes, you can hear in it like my dad almost sounding like Lenny in some ways, you know, mm-hmm. like really, and like you said, like practicing this voice of his. And it is, it's just a private recording. He had a reel-to-reel tape recorder that he brought everywhere with him because that was the size of the technology
sure.
back then. And he was just ranting. He was, you know, just maybe just literally personally ranting or just trying this stuff out. And you can, you know, he sounds like he's talking to an audience, but there's no audience there. It's just him. So yeah, we thought it was a historically interesting thing to do.
And it's amazing because your dad was always timely, and even reaching back to 1957, just to give a little hint, he's talking about the behavior of police. And you think about yeah. some of the things that we've been talking about in this country, especially over the past 2 years,
yep.
it's incredible to go back nearly 60 years and hear him talking about things that we're talking about now.
Well, yeah, I think that really shows, you know, I think the thing about my dad is he wasn't necessarily that prescient. He was just willing always to think about
mm-hmm.
and then at times talk about the things that our culture wasn't having a conversation about, you know, that were clearly going on. I mean, you know, the police, you know, abusing people, abusing their power has been going on since the very first policeman was
right.
ever.
Since the first donut was eaten by a cop somewhere.
Exactly. So, you know, he was always willing to say out loud what we as a country should probably be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about, you know, one of his shows where he talked about, you know, the owners of this country, you know, the
yes.
businessmen and the owners.
Yes.
And I mean, that was years before, you know, Occupy Wall Street and the conversation that we're now having.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bernie Sanders ran on that platform.
It's a good point. Bernie Sanders was essentially doing a Carlin routine in a very thick Brooklyn Jewish accent, was he not?
Exactly.
My God, he's really doing a Carlin bit up there. I saw him do that on HBO back in 88. Jesus,
exactly.
God.
Come on, Bernie. Get
yes,
some new material.
Yes, come on. Oh, God. You know, Bernie, stop plagiarizing. You know, your dad had what I like to call an incredible clarity in his comedy. And it's just what you were talking about. Every word mattered, and it made you think, and it made
yeah.
you laugh. And if you can do that, you're succeeding. That's not easy to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. He had a real gift for that. And, you know, and once he felt like he had a true freedom to tackle any topic that he wanted. And, you know, he talked about his show in 92, Jammin' in New York,
mm-hmm.
being a real seminal thing for him because he felt like he was really claiming his true artistic voice, you know, being able to talk about these broader cultural issues and not just the goofy stuff he loved to talk about. And once he gave himself that permission to kind of be that outsider and be that social scientist, if you will, it fed him constantly. I mean, I have these amazing handwritten notes in Ziploc baggies. He was very organized, too. He was kind of slightly OCD.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, these big topics like death, kids, language, you know. He loved tackling the things that, you know, we were all a little squirmish about. And he did. He spent a lot of time, you know, writing notes. You know, a thought would come, he'd write it down, and then eventually he'd have a pile of notes for that one topic, and then he'd have a big enough pile that he felt like he could really then turn it into one of these 8 to 10 minute essays. That is really what I always felt he was doing at the end.
Exactly,
these
yes.
great essays.
Yeah. Now, your dad was a hero to so many from so many different generations. There's somebody that works occasionally on my show. He's a weather guy. He was a huge guy in New York in the 1980s. His name is Lloyd Lindsay-Young. He was a big over-the-top weather guy. So here's Lloyd. He's sitting at Shea Stadium in a Met game, like mid-late 1980s, and he sees, coming up the aisle, it's George Carlin. He goes, oh, my God, I'm such a fan. Do I say hello to him? Well, your dad comes up to Lloyd, extends his hand, and say, Lloyd, I'm such a big fan of you. I need you to do me a big favor. I'm doing this HBO special in New Jersey. I need you to introduce me on stage. I love what you do with the weather on Channel 9. Lloyd tells me that's one of the highlights of his career, but it's amazing how your dad had such an effect and appeal with people.
Yeah, I agree. And to this day, too. I mean, it's been 8 years since he died, and
yes.
I am inundated all day long on social media with people who want to share their love for him
sure.
and regard, and it's very sweet and lovely and pretty amazing. I mean, you know, he, you know, before he died, a few months before he died, he was doing an interview, and he said, you know, I they asked him about legacy, you know, and people hate talking about that, especially comics. But he said, you know, I know one thing, that when they talk about comedy in the last half of the 20th century, they're going to have to mention me. And, you know, and it was like, that was very humble of Dad, I feel. But, you know, it's true. It really shows that his voice has this resonance still.
There are people now in 75 cities that are just waiting to find out where they can find you. Tell me all the social media stuff. Tell me your website. Tell me all that stuff.
So my website is kellycarlin.com. I just created a new website. Very proud of it. I'm on Twitter at Kelly_Carlin. And you can find me on Facebook. I have an official page, Kelly Carlin Official. And I'm on all those things. I'm also on Instagram, as Kelly Carlin Is Here. Loving Instagram. That's the only place I was all summer on social media.
Okay.
And, come find me on social media. Please don't send me a picture of my dad. And but we can still have a good time.
There you go. See, one little parameter, and other than that, everything's open. So
exactly.
Once again, I kind of like it when A Lot of People Die is available on CD. Vinyl. Vinyl? That's right, vinyl. Is back in digital. I've heard part of it. It is absolutely great. Laugh out loud funny. Every George Carlin fan will devour it like a pigeon eating a Cheez-It. Kelly Carlin, thank you so much for joining us here in America Weekend.
Thank you so much.
Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
She is one of the most successful doubles players of all time, capturing 112 titles, including 21 Grand Slam wins with her partner, Martina Navratilova.
Boom! Pam Shriver!
So where is Pam Shriver now? Pam married former James Bond actor George Lazenby in 2002. The couple had 3 children, but divorced in 2008. Pam has been a commentator for ABC and CBS and is currently with ESPN. While broadcasting Wimbledon in 2010, player James Blake took exception to the volume of her courtside commentary.
I'm just surprised
James Blake has like a foot in.
James just yelled at me. I'm way above the court, but evidently he can hear me. He's got rabbit ears.
Quiet down, Pam. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit HappylandAudio.com. That's HappylandAudio.com.
Welcome to American Biker Minute 280 degree switchbacks. All but the most experienced wrenches detest having to wire a set of Z-bars. Still, we're doubling the height and pullback of our old set. Today on American Biker Minute.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit HappylandAudio.com. That's HappylandAudio.com.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. After hours of staring at internet sites, we still couldn't find a true motorcycle Z-bar, other than those identical to what we have. JP Cycles catalog as a last resort. Found a good-looking set. Twice the rise, twice the pullback of a set we've been running for years. Just what the doctor ordered for a reasonable buck and a half. Tall, fresh Z-bars, along with the longer front fork tubes, will really set the chopper off. Build in progress at AmericanBikerMinute.com. American Biker Minute, your passport to the open road. 2 weeks.